Let's read together Genesis 48, verses 1 through 11. In this first half of the chapter, we have Jacob's adoption of the two sons of Joseph as his own sons. As a result, Ephraim and Manasseh become tribes in Israel. Genesis 48, beginning at verse 1. Now it came to pass after these things that Joseph was told, "Indeed, your father is sick." And he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And Jacob was told, "Look, your son Joseph is coming to you." And Israel strengthened himself and sat up on the bed. Then Jacob said to Joseph, "God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me, and said to me, 'Behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you, and I will make you a multitude of people, and give this land to your descendants after you as an everlasting possession.' And now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt, are mine, as Reuben and Simeon. They shall be mine. Your offspring whom you begat after them shall be yours, and will be called by the name of their brothers in their inheritance. But as for me, when I came from Paddan, Rachel died beside me in the land of Canaan on the way, when there was but a little distance to go to Ephrath. And I buried her there on the way to Ephrath, that is, Bethlehem." Then Israel saw Joseph's sons and said, "Who are these?" And Joseph said to his father, "These are my sons, whom God has given me in this place." And he said, "Bring them to me, and I will bless them." Now the eyes of Israel were dim with age, so that he could not see. Then Joseph brought them near him, and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said to Joseph, "I had not thought to see your face, but in fact, God has also shown me your offspring." Well, let's look at some background notes, first of all, for this section. At the end of Genesis 47, we saw that Jacob was old and ready to die. In fact, verse 29 of Genesis 47 says, "The time drew near that Israel must die." There is a time to die, Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 2. And we will all pass through death if the Lord doesn't return during our lifetime. The important thing is to be ready to die. Jacob was ready to die. He was trusting the Lord, and he believed the promises of God. Now here in chapter 48, we read that Jacob was sick. Joseph realized that his father Jacob may die at any time. So he came to Goshen, probably came from the important city of Memphis, and that's where Joseph most likely lived at this time. And Joseph brought with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. Now, how old do you think these boys were at this time? Well, look back up here in Genesis 47, in verse 28, we read there, "And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. And we know from Genesis 45 and verse 11 that when Jacob and the family came down to Egypt, there were still 5 years of famine left. And we know from Genesis 41, verse 50, as well as what we have in this chapter, that Joseph's sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, were born to him during the years of plenty. Well, you put all that data together, and you come out with Ephraim and Manasseh being in their early 20s. But now the important background note here is that Jacob officially adopted these boys as his own in order that they would become tribes in Israel. Look once again at verses 5 and 6. "And now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine. Your offspring whom you begat after them shall be yours, and will be called by the name of their brothers in their inheritance." What verse 6 means here is that any other children who were born to Joseph would also become part of the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. So there was no tribe of Joseph in Israel. Instead, there were two tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh. That means there were 13 tribes in Israel. 12 sons of Jacob, but 13 tribes of Israel. However, the land of Canaan was divided up into 12 tribal areas. The tribe of Levi had no tribal area because they became the priestly tribe. Now, one more background note. Why does Jacob mention Reuben and Simeon in verse 5? "And now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt, are mine, as Reuben and Simeon. they shall be mine. That is, you see, Ephraim and Manasseh would be sons of Jacob as Reuben and Simeon were. What's going on here is that the birthright is being removed from Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, and from Simeon, Jacob's secondborn, and given to Joseph, the firstborn of Rachel, Ephraim and Manasseh being put ahead of Reuben and Simeon, and therefore the double portion of the inheritance, which was part of the birthright, Joseph would receive in his two sons becoming tribes in Israel. Now let me just read in this connection, 1 Chronicles chapter 5 and verse 1. Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, he was indeed the firstborn, but because he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given to the sons of Joseph. Well, so much for the background notes. Now let's move on to our doctrinal or teaching points. Doctrinal or teaching point number one. God controls the unexpected twists and turns of history. God controls the unexpected twists and turns of history. Now, we just read in 1 Chronicles chapter 5 and verse 1 that it was because of Reuben's sin that the birthright was removed from him and given to Joseph. We read about Reuben's sin in chapter 35 and verse 22. And it happened when Israel dwelt in that land that Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine. Who would have ever expected such an event? Here Jacob had finally come back to the land and finally come back to Bethel in line with the will of God. And of all things, his firstborn son had an incestuous relationship with one of his wives. What an unexpected tragedy. But here in Genesis 48, we see how God overruled that event and history took an unexpected turn. Joseph was given the birthright, and Ephraim and Manasseh were brought in as tribes in Israel. God wanted Ephraim and Manasseh as tribes in Israel, and he overruled events, including Reuben's sin, to bring about this unexpected twist of history. God controls the unexpected twists and turns of history. You know, a few hundred years from this time, history would take another unexpected turn. A large group of Hebrew slaves in Egypt would actually escape and become one of the greatest nations ever to live on the face of this earth. God would overrule the satanic schemes of Pharaoh to kill off all the male Hebrew babies and preserve a little baby named Moses. And you know the rest of the story. God controls the unexpected twists and turns of history. You know, this doctrinal point is not only true in reference to nations, but also in reference to individual people, including you and me. And that brings us to our second doctrinal point. God controls the unexpected blessings and sorrows of life. God controls the unexpected blessings and sorrows of life. Look at verse 7. Jacob says, "But as for me, when I came from Paddan, Rachel died beside me in the land of Canaan on the way, when there was but a little distance to go to Ephrath, and I buried her there on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem." Now that certainly was an unexpected sorrow for Jacob. God allowed this to happen. Why? We don't know all the answers here. We do know that Jacob recognized that God was in control, however. He changed the name of that child from Benoni, son of my sorrow, which Rachel gave him, to Benjamin, son of my right hand, definitely indicating that Jacob recognized that God was in control. And we do know that this unexpected sorrow prepared Jacob for greater sorrows to come. And the overall result was to bring Jacob closer to the Lord. You know, just this last week, we received word that a Christian friend of ours was operated on and left partially paralyzed. But she would be the first to tell you that she believes God is in control. You know, there are all kinds of unexpected sorrows in this life, but God controls them. Now look at verse 11. "And Israel said to Joseph, 'I had not thought to see your face, but in fact, God has also shown me your offspring.'" What an unexpected blessing. Jacob never thought that he would see Joseph again. But he not only got to see Joseph again, he got to see his grandchildren as well. What a blessing. Now, many of you here who have grandchildren know exactly what I'm talking about. Look at the wonderful relationship we see there in verse 10. Now the eyes of Israel were dim with age so that he could not see. Then Joseph brought them near him and he kissed them and embraced them. Unexpected blessing. Just this past Friday night at our Friday night Bible study, a Christian couple, they shared the happy news with us that they're going to have a baby. And we all rejoice together. I mean, they've been trying for a long time, but now here an unexpected blessing comes along. They would be the first to tell you that this is an answer to our prayers. God is in control of the timing and everything's worked out just right. Do you see the doctrinal point here? God controls the unexpected blessings and sorrows of life. Now let's take one practical application. Let's pass on a legacy of faith. Notice that the last days of Jacob are not self-centered, but they're God-centered. We saw that at the end of chapter 47, and we see it here. No wonder Jacob's new name, Israel, is used much more than Jacob in this chapter. When Jacob spoke to Joseph, he didn't speak about the weather or conditions in his home in Goshen, and he didn't complain about the arthritis of his old age or anything like that. No, his focus was on the things of the Lord, and his main concern was to pass on the legacy of faith. In verse 3, he told Joseph how God Almighty, that's El Shaddai, appeared to him at Luz. Luz, that was the name for Bethel, before Jacob renamed it Bethel, meaning house of God. Jacob relates here how God had appeared to him and communicated with him. Once in Genesis 28, when he's running away, you remember, from Esau, and then God appears to him again at Bethel in Genesis 35, when Jacob finally returns to the land, as God wanted him to do. All that God revealed to Jacob of the covenant promises, Jacob wanted to pass on, and Jacob made sure he passed on this legacy of faith. What about us? Will we pass on the legacy of faith? It's our responsibility. I'm so glad that both my father and my father-in-law passed on the legacy of faith to me. Their whole lives, including their last days, were characterized by the things of God. They passed on the legacy of faith. Well, I hope and pray that I'll be able to pass on the legacy of faith to my family. What kind of person will you be in your so-called golden years? Will you be a complainer because of the pains and limitations of old age? Will you be bitter because nobody seems to care for you? Will you have a poisoned tongue and vindictive spirit? After all, some people did some mean things to you throughout life. Or will you be like Jacob and be concerned about passing on the legacy of faith? Let's pass on the legacy of faith.